Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Joining us on the podcast today from Baltimore, Maryland is Denise Uren. Denise was able to quit her job and live off her rental income by the time she had 10 rentals. But she didn't stop there. She kept on buying. Today, she's got a portfolio of 50 rentals. And I want to figure out today how she built this portfolio. I want to talk about the financing. I want to go into some of the deals and see how you get from one property up to 50. Let's take a quick break. We'll get a quick word from our sponsor. We'll come back and we'll get right into the interview.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Denise, welcome to the show. How did you first get started in real estate?
I first got started in real estate back in 2005. I was working for a chemical company in Baltimore. And at the time, I read a book that was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it really changed my thinking. And I thought, what can I do to become self-employed, to try to reach financial freedom? And I just thought rental properties was the way to go.
Okay.
So I started research. I had hooked up with a previous coworker that I had known. He had started buying rental properties, and he walked me through it. And I've been buying ever since. And along the way, I did obtain my real estate license. And I also became a real estate broker about 5 years ago. So I've been doing this full time. It took me about 3 years to be able to quit my job and do the real estate full time. So by 2008, I was self-employed, and I haven't stopped since. I'm still buying, rehabbing, and renting, and it is my passion.
So let's talk about that. So you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You figured, I got to figure out how to do that. How long did it take you I assume you did some kind of more research or more learning. How long did it take you from the time you decided this is something I want to do until you bought your first property?
It took me about 8 to 9 months to find my first property, because back in 2005, the market was still such that it was very difficult to find a property that would cash flow where I needed it to be. And at that time, my goal was that I wanted to bring in at least $300 a month positive cash flow after all expenses, you know, mortgage, everything was paid. So it took quite some time. And another challenge that I found was that I could not find a real estate agent that would take the time to work with me. Mm-hmm. Going to Class C neighborhoods, there wasn't a whole lot of commission involved in the deal. So that's the reason why I became a real estate agent, so I could get access to properties myself.
So you bought that first property. Tell us about that first deal. Like, how much did it cost and what were you able to rent it out for?
This was a turnkey property. It was rented to a Section 8 tenant for $800 a month. And the purchase price was $49,000. I didn't have to make any repairs. It was tenant occupied. And at that time, the positive cash flow, I believe, was around $320 a month.
Okay, great. Now, you mentioned it took you 3 years of buying properties before you were able to leave your job. How many properties did that take? How many did you have by that 3 year mark?
I can't remember exactly the number of properties, but I remember I set my goal at positive cash flow of around $4,000 a month.
Okay. So if you're making $4,000 a month,
it may have been around 10 units.
Okay.
I'm guessing somewhere around that.
Now, was it difficult to get financing on these properties? Like, how were you able to get the financing for those 10 properties?
That's a great question. When I first started, well, actually before I bought my first one, I wanted to be prepared to make a cash offer. And in my case, I was able to open a line of credit for my primary residence. my friends and family thought I was absolutely nuts for using the equity in my house. But I had the goal. I saw the vision. And when that deal came up, I was able to write a check for my line of credit and pay cash.
Okay.
At that time, it wasn't as difficult to refi. I'm thinking I may have been able to refi within 6 months. They may have had some seasoning there I had to meet. And then I don't remember having any issues with the appraisal that came back for that property.
Okay.
So I was able to get all the money back to pay back my line of credit. And then I had that money available for my next deal. And I just kept purchasing that way.
Okay. So you would use your line of credit to buy something. And then once you bought it, you would refi, get your money back, and then just keep on repeating that same process.
That's correct.
Wow.
And then when I got to the point where, you know, multiple deals would come up, I mean, this was probably 5-6 years after I started using hard money because
okay.
I was getting enough cash flow in these Class C neighborhoods where I could pay that hard money payment at 12% and still have really good cash flow.
Okay.
And I want to add that when I started, my goal for cash flow per month was 300. As the years went on, the prices of these homes went down even further. Rents went up, and the cash flow per month cash flow I'm getting now compared to then, some are over $800-$1,000 a month per house.
Wow. All right, let's talk about that. So say for one of your recent deals, what did you pay for the property?
Let's see. I believe the last property I purchased and did pretty much a gut renovation was about $9,000.
Okay. Wow. That's and really cheap. So $9,000. And then how much did the gut renovation cost?
Between $55,000 and $60,000.
Okay.
And that was with all new systems. I do make the properties lead free when I'm doing this type of renovation.
Okay.
So, that's one of my goals now as well, to have all lead-free properties.
Okay. And tell us what that means. So how is a property lead-free? That you've taken out all the walls with the lead-based paint?
Yes.
Okay.
Typically what will happen is the lead inspector will come through and do the XRF test. It's basically an X-ray gun. And most of the areas in your house that contain lead-based paint or the trim. You know, you mm-hmm. have your trim, banisters, your stair stringers, treads. So whatever comes out positive, the lead inspector will mark with a Sharpie, and you have to go in and remove and replace. So,
okay.
And it's also legal to encapsulate, but in our, you know, situations, we always remove and replace anything that has lead.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. So with your latest property, so you're all in for everything with your rehab and your purchase cost somewhere around $65,000?
Yes.
Okay. And then what would that property rent out for?
Anywhere, if it's a 3-bed, 1-bath in Baltimore City in this neighborhood, anywhere from $13,000 to $13,750.
Incredible. Wow. That's really good. So you just kept on doing this. You just kept on buying properties. Now, when you left your job and you went full time into owning and managing your properties, was it harder to get financing? Because a lot of those banks, that they want to look at W-2 income. And as soon as you leave your job, it gets tough. Did you have that experience, or was it no big deal?
I didn't have an issue with that. I believe that the income that was being generated from the properties helped out. I wasn't going to these larger banks that have to follow the Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae guidelines. So I was basically going to like portfolio lenders.
Okay.
So they would really look at the income that I was generating from the rentals. And keep in mind also, I was a real estate agent, still am, you know, and I was still making some income.
Right, from sales.
From that business as well.
Okay. Now, these neighborhoods that you're buying in, are these dangerous or rough neighborhoods?
Any neighborhood in the city, any city, I think can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I never felt threatened. I usually don't visit at night. I don't really visit my properties much anymore, period. But it's not because I'm fearful. It's just I don't have to because I have people that do that for me.
Okay. So do you have a property manager?
No.
Okay. So you're managing it yourself. But if something comes up, if there's a leaky faucet, you'll just send over a handyman to fix it.
That's correct.
Not okay. Wow. So what about for showing properties when there's a vacancy? Do you show the properties yourself?
Not usually. I usually have people that do that for me as well. I do use some tenant placement services. Are you familiar with?
No, tell us about that.
Okay. There are folks out there. All they do is try to find tenants for landlords. And the fee for that the landlord pays is usually equal to 1 month's rent.
Okay.
So it's well worth it for me. You know, they do everything. They take pictures, they market, they show the properties, they attend inspections because we always have their Section 8 inspections, and they also sign the lease. So they pretty much do everything. Okay. It's a lot of work. And yeah. I have no problem paying someone 1 month's rent to take care of the tenant placement.
It's totally worth it. Right. Because, I mean, if you have to show the property to 10 applicants, for example, I mean, that's a lot of work to go over there and meet them. And then so do the tenants know you, or are they talking to other people?
They know me.
OK.
Yeah, they know me.
OK. OK. Do they know that you're the owner, or do you? I know a lot of landlords won't tell them they're the owner. They act as if they're a manager or some kind of administrative person. Do you let them know that you're the owner?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And are the tenants, sometimes the rap in a C-class neighborhood is that the tenants are difficult to deal with. Is that true?
I don't find that necessarily to be 100% true. I think one of the most important factors when finding tenants is do your screening. You know, I have these tenant placement folks that are finding me tenants, but I also know what they're doing. You know, I know that they do property visits, and that's something that a lot of newer landlords don't know you can do, is when we're screening an applicant, if they look at our home and they're interested in renting, then we ask them if it's okay to do a home visit where they currently live.
Oh, okay. And so you get an idea of how they keep the house.
Right.
Okay.
And personally, this is what I do that's worked very well for me, is I tell the tenant if we do a home visit and everything checks out great, I can be very flexible in the security deposit. Because if I walk into their house and see that they're really taking care of it, I'm pretty sure that when they eventually move out of my home, there's not going to be a ton of damage.
Right.
And you know, I market mostly to voucher tenants. They don't have a lot of money. You know, if I'm asking for $1,300 a month rent, chances are they're going to have a hard time coming up with the $1,300. Mm-hmm. So I am flexible with security deposits most of the time.
So what would a typical deposit be for one of your tenants?
Well, it really depends when our screening process results.
Okay.
If we do a case search, we look at criminal history. And keep in mind, too, that Section 8 does screen the tenants as well, especially if they have a new voucher, they just got on the program. They have to meet certain standards before they get that voucher.
Now, for anyone that doesn't understand, can you explain to us how Section 8 works? So these are lower income people where the government is paying most of their rent, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Some tenants pay a portion, and that portion is based on what their monthly income is. And usually they have to pay 30% of what their income is. For instance, if they have checks coming in that total $1,000 a month, then their monthly rent portion that they owe to the landlord is $300 a month.
Okay. Okay.
If they don't have any income, then their portion is zero.
Okay.
And they do get reevaluated every year to see if their income has changed. So their portions, after they're in your unit, the tenant portion can change from year to year based on the tenant's income.
And as a landlord, that's great for you because if the rent is $1,300 a month, the tenant's paying $300 a month. On the first of the month, you get your direct deposit from the housing authority.
Yes.
Right. And then the tenant has to pay their $300. And if they don't pay, you can tell them, if you don't pay, I'm going to get you kicked off Section 8. And they don't want that.
Well, the first step is we file in rent court. We file in rent court the 6th of every month. Mm-hmm. And we remind the tenants that if the landlord is awarded the judgment and it proceeds to eviction, if that tenant gets evicted, they will lose their voucher.
Okay.
So it's really up to landlords to enforce their lease and enforce, you know, these rent payments from the tenants. I think a lot of landlords out there, you know, if the tenant portion is 150 or 200 and Section 8's paying the majority, say 1,000, some of the landlords just let those payments slide by. But that money adds up over time.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
So we enforce everything in our lease.
Okay. Now, do you find that these tenants do more damage? I always hear that with a C-class property. They always say that C-class properties, the tenants are hard to deal with and they do a lot of damage. Is that true? Or is it just really dependent on the tenant?
It really depends. I have not had major issues with that. And there again, I enforce my lease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in their lease that they have to take care of the unit. And HUD does do, or Section 8 does do, their annual inspections after the tenant's in place. And when they get their annual inspection, if there is damage there that is clearly the tenant's fault, you know, if their children are writing on the walls or their carpet's really dirty, they will get the violation. The tenant will get that violation. So they have to take care of the repair before their reinspection. So sometimes you'll get a Section 8 repair list that's broken down into two parts. Some mm-hmm. repairs are the owner's responsibility and others are the tenant's responsibility.
Okay.
And if they don't do their repairs, they lose their voucher. So again, you know, they have to follow the rules of Section 8 mm-hmm. and in their lease.
Right. Now, if someone's a new investor and they're looking to get started, a lot of times the returns can be so much higher with a C-class property than with a B-class property. I mean, it's basically double in a lot of cases. But would you caution a new investor that they really need to learn either by having them show them the right way to do it or figuring it out? Or like, is it dangerous, I guess, is maybe my question. Is it dangerous for a new investor to buy in a C-class neighborhood?
Dangerous, not really the right word. It's challenging. The most challenging part that I tell all my new investors is that it is tough. It's almost nearly impossible to refi out. So for instance, if a new investor pays cash or uses hard money to purchase a property, does the renovations, gets a tenant in place, they're ready to refi to pay their hard money lender back. The issue is when a bank comes in to do an appraisal in these C-class neighborhoods, you're not going to find any sales comps that are where they need to be to get your appraisal at the number you need it to be. So, for instance, in this Class C neighborhood where I am, I don't think there's a sales comp within the past 90 days over $25,000. Now, remember, we talked, I'm all into these properties for about $60,000-$65,000 if they're lead-free, you know, gut renovations. How I'm able to refi out is that I'm working with a commercial lender. Okay. They're blanket mortgages. And when they do their appraisals, they factor in the income. They use the income approach. So because my rents are so high in these neighborhoods, it increases my appraised value. So I'm able to refi out. If you're a new investor and you're, you know, just buying one or two properties in this type of neighborhood, it's going to be very, very challenging to be able to refinance that property with a regular, you know, conventional mortgage.
Right. So how would someone do that? Like, how can they, like, is it even possible to refi out with
If they had enough properties to go to a commercial lender, you know, four or more properties, then they could possibly do the commercial loan and have them use the income approach when they do their appraisal.
Okay.
But for new investors, I highly recommend, and I show them the difference in the numbers, the property values, the ARVs between a C neighborhood and a B neighborhood. So I pretty much highly recommend to new investors to stay in those B type neighborhoods.
Okay. Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do. The returns are so much higher with a C class neighborhood. I mean, your cash flow is just through the roof compared to what it would be in a B class neighborhood. So I see why people are attracted to the C class neighborhoods. But Denise, if someone is looking to get started in Baltimore, they're actually in luck because you actually have a seminar that you're putting on. Can you tell us about what you're doing?
Okay. The seminar coming up is at the end of March, March 25th and 26th. And I'll basically be telling my story. I am going to run through how to evaluate a rental property, looking at the cash flow and your return on investment. I'll go over different types of neighborhoods. I'll show examples from a class A neighborhood, B versus C versus D. D means don't buy there because it's not going to work. But I'll be going over the different locations, different numbers, cash flow. I mean, I know new investors now that are buying in a class B neighborhood, and they're getting $400 a month plus positive cash flow. So these
That's
B class neighborhoods work. They're
yeah.
very good. And these newer investors are getting more per month than I did when I started.
Right.
So
right.
it's so much easier now. I'll also go over how to invest with other people's money. You know, most of my deals I've basically purchased with no money out of my pocket, whether I'm using a line of credit or a hard money lender, private lender. I'm refining out, getting all that money back. I'll go over some tips there. Also, I'll be going over how to rehab a rental property. I'll share all the materials I use in my properties. We'll also, on day two, we'll tour through a few of my properties at different stages of renovation. I can show people a lead-free property versus one that's lead safe, all the different materials that are used. I share all of my numbers. I have several different examples, before and after pictures of renovations, including all of the numbers for those particular properties. So it's going to be a very, very fun seminar and very informative.
It sounds great. Yeah. Anyone that's in the Baltimore area looking to invest there, I would definitely recommend looking up Denise and checking out the seminar. Where can someone find out more information online about it?
You can go to my website, which is ultimatehomesrealty.com. Again, that's ultimatehomesrealty.com. And on the left-hand side of the page, just scroll down to the investor's corner. And the first link under that is seminars, and you can find the information there.
Okay, great.
And you can also find other information, for rehabbing properties in Baltimore, links to certain websites. It's a very useful site to go to if you're interested in Baltimore City.
And people always complain that they have a hard time finding an investor-friendly agent. Are you accepting new clients if someone's looking to buy in Baltimore?
I am not personally, but
okay.
I do have a couple of agents in my brokerage, and I refer buyers to them.
Okay.
So if anyone's looking, you know, contact me again through my website, and I can steer you in the right direction.
Great. Well, if you missed the website, I will go ahead and put a link to it on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode97. Well, Denise, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy investing.
Great. And thank you for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.